Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda, and today I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram. Today is Wednesday, May 4th, 2022. Commentary. Williamson's impact went beyond the sports page, by Stuart Doreen. Everything I am professionally, I owe to Terry Williamson. He hired me in 1994, stayed patient with his fiery, error-prone prima donna, and served as a role model for what it meant to be in community journalism. Like Ted Battles before him, Terry wasn't just a sports reporter. He was the face of the sports department, and Terry understood what that meant. He didn't try to make his name off the actions of the people he covered. That is not what a good community newspaper man does. He didn't put his brand over the brand of the Reporter-Telegram. Again, community journalism doesn't require a hot take. Terry knew that. Terry often put his ego aside and served the kids and coaches who he covered. Service might be the most appropriate word. To know Terry was to realize he was more than just an award-winning sports journalist. In fact, he was a better person and exemplary family man. Though Terry would often kid that his wife had their baby girls during the week, which allowed him to still cover football on Friday night, there was not a more devoted husband or prouder papa. Being a newspaper man was a profession and not an obsession. As the First Baptist family will likely remind us at the celebration of his life today, Terry was Christ-centered in the way he lived his life and the way he loved his wife, June, and his girls, Shane and Regina. Pastor Darren Wood will tell us more about Terry's faith. Again, Terry was a role model there as well. There aren't many great memories of my first years in Midland that don't involve Terry. When there was a big game, Terry allowed me to come along for the ride. Those nights etched in my memory include my first Lee Permian game in 1995, when Ratliff Stadium was packed and there was an honest-to-goodness Field of Dreams line of cars, headlights blazing and all, extending for miles. There was Midland High's trip to the 1998 state basketball tournament in Austin. Sure, it was historic that the Bulldogs won the 5A championship. However, I will also remember that night that Terry and I ate so much at Papacito's Mexican Cantina that we actually begged a member of the wait staff to take our plates because it hurt our stomachs just to look at the leftovers. I remember Terry holding court on the east-facing dock at the old Reporter-Telegram building. I remember sharing a two-person box at the old Midland Memorial Stadium, arguably the worst press accommodations in all of West Texas. I remember eating at Whataburger on the nights when it was just us working in the office. I remember Terry being off when the pages and pages of local bowling results hit the sports department inbox. Perks of being the boss, I suppose. But most of all, I remember that man who didn't know me from Adam, but was willing to meet with me as I dropped off resumes in the newsrooms across West Texas in early August 1994. After telling me about what it meant to work at a daily newspaper, he said, "We'll see if something comes up." 3 months later, he called me at my Texas A&M dorm room to ask if I wanted to join the team on the following January. Just like that, I would graduate with a job secured. You see, when Terry added me to a staff that included Bill Pettit and Amy McDaniel, I became the lucky one. He was setting me up for success and the opportunity to work in West Texas's best city. 27 years later, that call was still the most significant moment of my professional life. Terry is the third member of my Mount Rushmore of all-time Reporter-Telegram staffers. Like fellow members Ted Battles and Ed Todd, Terry produced the content that readers in Midland made part of their day for a combined 100-plus years. The three represented about what was great about the community newspaper. They knew their audience, and their readers depended on them. They didn't worry about page views or visits. They just wanted the story they were working on to be a perfect description of what they experienced. Terry, here's hoping you have already had a first staff meeting with Battles, Todd, and other Reporter-Telegram alumni like Gary Ott and Jim Servatius. Terry, here's knowing you are finally with your Jesus that I have to think is a certainty.
Both sides talk on abortion. Local GOP concerned over leaked report. Midland's Democratic chair, talking about the leak is not the story, by Stuart Doreen. On Monday night, the website Politico reported that the U.S. Supreme Court was set to overturn the Roe v. Wade decision protecting the constitutional right to abortion. It didn't take long for both sides of the abortion argument to begin fighting over the repercussions of a reversal of the landmark case. As Bloomberg reported Tuesday, a ruling overturning Roe would be transformational, legally, politically, and socially. 26 states would be likely to ban most abortions, according to the Guttmacher Institute, a research organization that backs abortion rights. That shift would come even as countries elsewhere liberalize their abortion laws. But former Republican National Committee man Ernest Angelo said Tuesday, "What a majority on the court has allegedly decided is secondary right now to the issue that someone leaked a draft opinion. This is horrendous," Angelo said. Bloomberg even noted that the disclosure of the draft opinion also marks an extraordinary breach of protocol for an institution that has long prided itself for being almost leak-proof. In the Supreme Court's modern history, no draft decision has been disclosed publicly while a case was pending. A new precedent has been set, and Angelo said it destroys the reputation of the court, and he worried that is not getting the attention. The issue of abortion is huge, but that is not the story in my mind. It is sad. Kathy Broderick is the chair of the Midland County Democratic Party. She stated in an email to the Reporter Telegram on Tuesday that ignoring the content of the draft opinion and talking about the leak is not the story. Broderick talked about Texas abortion laws that she said allows bounties on the head of anyone who assists someone wanting an abortion is wrong. I honestly don't know what to expect from the court if they're willing to overturn 50 years of precedent, Broderick wrote. I have volunteered as a victim's service advocate and as a CASA court-appointed special advocate for many years. There is nothing easy about being a pregnant 13-year-old who doesn't know whether her brother or her father is the father of her child. There are women who have an IUD because their husband will throw away her birth control pills. I know many people who have had tubal pregnancies or had to make medical choices while pregnant. These health care choices are not our business. Broderick said provisions of the Affordable Care Act that made birth controls free would have lowered the number of abortions and that promotion of sex education would do more to reduce teen pregnancy than shaming young people with moral opinions. Preaching abstinence only will not stop unplanned pregnancies, Broderick wrote. Reversing Roe will not stop abortions. Congressman August Pfluger had a different opinion about the apparent victory coming for the pro-life movement. The San Angelo Republican stated, "Overturning Roe v. Wade would be a momentous victory for the fight to protect unborn life." However, Pfluger also called for an investigation of the U.S. Supreme Court leak. Even another Bloomberg report stated that Monday's leak of the draft opinion shocked legal experts, former clerks, and the court itself. It also reported that State Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, and other lawmakers called on the Justice Department to investigate the leak, and Chief Justice John Roberts directed the Marshal of the Court to do likewise. There must be severe consequences for any attempt to intimidate the judiciary, Pfluger said. We cannot let this go unanswered. Hello, this is Cindy, continuing to read the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday. Analysis. Literacy gains are required for a PB. They will help manage areas' job population growth. By Stuart Doreen. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin released its Adult Literacy Needs Assessment 2022 on Tuesday during an event in Monahans. The 52-page document was released to local media ahead of the event. The following highlights were included in the executive summary. The population of the Permian Basin is projected to grow by more than 68% in the next 20 years. That growth will drive the need for additional workers for the approximately 115,000 new jobs that need to be filled by 2050. According to economist Ray Perriman, and 30% of these new jobs will require literary skills to navigate dense, lengthy, and complicated texts and apply their understanding to new tasks and contexts. The majority of the counties in the Permian Basin rank among the least literate and least educated in the United States. Improving adult literacy would have a transformative economic impact for the Permian Basin and its residents. If the Permian Basin were able to match the current literacy rates in Texas and New Mexico by 2040, the annual earnings gain would be approximately $353 million, with more than $242 million in new gross product each year and more than 6,725 new jobs. Improving the region's literacy pipeline will require improving the capacity, availability, and accessibility of education programs. The study's findings included that a large percentage of residents in each county are estimated to have literary skills comparable to a second grader and do not have a high school diploma. It also stated that assessments in third, fifth, and ninth grades are lower than the state averages in most counties. The executive summary also found that many adults are not able to access education programs due to lack of proximity, digital access, childcare, or scheduling conflicts with work. It also stated libraries that are positioned to expand access are understaffed and under-resourced. The analysis also states that the Permian Basin has assets that can be leveraged to address the findings and offers recommendations to improve the adult literacy system. They include, coordinate as a coalition to develop a shared data and performance management infrastructure. Mobilize a campaign to inform adult learners what is available and to inform state and federal officials what is needed. Collaborate with school districts, adult literacy providers, and public libraries to expand adult education options in specific communities that are most isolated. Identify ways to improve access to adult education opportunities and accelerate pathways beyond high school for English learners. Expanding access to adult education programs that are braided with workforce training. Develop literacy supports for students in the middle grades, 5th through 8th, and improve the pipeline from high school graduation to post-secondary education and workforce training. Lastly, the analysis offered ways to improve the impact of programs, including offering child care at adult education centers, incentivizing adult education, social services, and other nonprofit staff to learn Spanish, increasing funding salaries for adult education teachers, creating stable funding for adult education and social service providers, and leveraging the region's preschool programs to share resources with parents about adult literacy and other social services. Also, the summary called for allowing officials to track students over time rather than requiring consistent attendance, offering short-term certifications, and giving learners more manageable goals, and using paper-based learning as a supplement when internet access is limited. The assessment is a study made possible by the support of the Abel Hanger Foundation, FMH Foundation, Aline Ford Brown Foundation, and the Permian Strategic Partnership.
Crime Stoppers ups reward for man wanted for sexual assault of a child by Mercedes Cordero. Midland Crime Stoppers has increased the reward it is offering for the information that leads to the arrest of a man wanted for aggravated sexual assault of a child. The Lone Star Fugitive Task Force, along with the Midland County Sheriff's Office Warrant Division, is searching for fugitive David Bonilla, 32, for aggravated sexual assault of a child, grand jury indictment. If a person makes an official Crime Stoppers tip via the hotline website, or mobile app that leads to the arrest of Bonilla, he or she will be eligible for the $1,000 cash reward. No caller ID is ever used, and a person will remain anonymous.
National Weather Service. First 100-degree day coming this weekend by Stuart Doreen. Midland's first 100-degree day in 2022 is in the National Weather Service's 7-day forecast. The NWS is calling for a high Saturday of 101 degrees, which would be 15 degrees above normal for May 7th, and it would mean a 100-degree day arrived more than 1 month ahead of last year, June 11th. The threat of triple digits this weekend continues a hotter-than-normal period of weather in Midland. The National Weather Service reported that April was one of the top warmest in Midland's recorded history. The NWS website showed an average temperature of 69.0 degrees, which was 2.8 degrees above normal and the eighth warmest April on record. The warm temperatures are continuing to dry out Midland. While some areas of the city received rainfall this past weekend, there was just a trace at Midland International Airport. That kept Midland at 0.52 inch of rain since September 1st. Midland County remains in the midst of a burn ban, and drought conditions are exceptional, the most intense and impactful stage of drought, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. The Climate Prediction Center calls for a 60 to 70% chance of above average temperatures in May and a 40 to 50% chance of below average precipitation. The CPC also calls for a 50 to 60% chance of above average temperatures from June through August and a 30 to 40% chance of below average precipitation. Obituaries and death notices from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday. Norma Elaine Hicks passed away on April 30th after a lengthy illness. Elaine was born on January 4, 1942, to Carol C. Jones and Alice B. Howell on a farm near Olton, Texas. She is preceded in death by her husband, Johnny C. Hicks, her parents, son-in-law Steve Culpepper, brother-in-law Newland Rowland. She is survived by her sister, Carolyn Rowland of Hart, Texas, sister-in-law Randy Prentice and husband Don of Marlin, Texas, daughter Sherry Culpepper of Midland, sons Donnie Hicks and wife Patricia of Lubbock, Scott Hicks and wife Kim of Midland, grandchildren and great-grandchildren, numerous nieces and nephews. A celebration of life will be held this July. Date and time will be announced. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Gregory D. Flowers, 59, of Midland, passed away April 26th. Visitation will be on Saturday, May 7th, from 11 a.m. until 12:30 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, May 7th at 1 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Billy Roy Wilson, known by many as Bill Flip Wilson, 88, of Midland, passed away on Monday, May 2nd. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. David Jackson, 69, of Midland, passed away May 1st. Visitation will be on Thursday, May 5th, from 6 p.m. until 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held on Friday, May 6th, at 11 a.m. at Antioch Baptist Church. Interment will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens Cemetery. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Johnny Galindo, 63, passed away Friday, April 29th. Viewing will be Thursday, May 5th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral Mass is set for Friday, May 6th at 2 p.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. William A. Provins, Jr., 86, of Midland, passed away May 2nd. A gathering with family and friends will be held at a later date. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for May 4th, 2022. Accused takes the stand in murder trial. Defendant hoped to sue county and launch TikTok music career. By Kim Smith. An Odessa man on trial for murder told a jury Tuesday that while he fired a gun at a teenager 2 years ago, he'd never intended to kill him. Tuesday was the second day in the trial of Desmond Tuggle. The 23-year-old is accused of shooting 17-year-old Osvaldo Chevy Retriera, 17, in the back on May 16, 2020, in the 1100 block of North Jackson Avenue. Tuggle's girlfriend, Destiny Barrera, testified Tuesday she'd made arrangements to sell a fourth ounce of marijuana to someone via text and had asked Tuggle to drive her to meet her customer because she didn't know him. When they arrived at the Jackson Avenue apartments, Barrera told jurors she handed the marijuana to a young man who came to her side of Tuggle's Dodge Nitro. She said he then gave her a $100 bill, which she suspected was fake. She gave Tuggle the fake bill, mentioning her suspicions, and suddenly he was reaching across her with a gun, Barrera said. I leaned back and covered my ears, and he shot out the window, Barrera said. As they drove away, Barrera said she asked Tuggle if he'd hit the teenager. He said, I don't know. He either fell because I hit him or because he was scared, Barrera said. Barrera and Tuggle were arrested the following morning, both on a murder charge. Barrera told jurors she agreed to testify before the grand jury and at Tuggle's trial, but prosecutors did not offer her a deal. She said the grand jury declined to indict her. Dr. Tasha Greenberg, a deputy medical examiner with Tarrant County, testified Renteria died from a single gunshot wound to the back that pierced his lung and caused him to lose his entire body's volume of blood. Jurors also watched two surveillance videos Tuesday. In the videos, Renteria is seen approaching the Dodge and running away seconds later. A muzzle flash was also seen. Renteria fell face first roughly 20 to 25 feet away from the vehicle. He was pronounced dead at the hospital several hours later. In addition, jurors saw a video of Sergeant Justin Cade interviewing Tuggle the morning after the slaying. Initially, Tuggle said he'd loaned his Dodge to Barrera. But after being told the murder was captured on video, he confessed to shooting Renteria. During the interview, Tuggle said Renteria snatched the marijuana from Barrera and he fired at him because he was scared. He repeatedly begged Cade not to charge Barrera in the murder. It happened so fast, I just reacted. I wish things didn't go down like that, Tuggle said. At one point, there's no explanation, no reason for what I done, he said at another point. He told the detective he wasn't going to survive in prison because no one there is going to care that Renteria was trying to rob them. During his testimony Tuesday, Tuggle insisted that Rentriera had robbed him despite being advised that robbery involves the taking of property through force or the threat of force or by causing bodily injury. While Tuggle testified, Rentriera snatched the marijuana and Beria said she handed it to him. Both tested Rentriera did not hit, push, or threaten Barrera. Barrera also testified she didn't think Rentriera was armed. Tuggle said he didn't see Rentriera's hands, but figured he was armed. Tuggle told jurors he's been robbed before and he was frightened. It was like a fight or flight moment and I chose to fight, Tuggle said. He said he pointed and fired the gun, but didn't expect to hit anything. Under questioning from his attorney, Joanna Curry, Tuggle said he agreed to give Barrera a ride that night, not knowing they were going to a drug deal. He also insisted he stopped dealing drugs after high school and drug-related texts on his phone were sent to Barrera, who often used his iPhone because she didn't like her inexpensive phone. During Cade's testimony, jurors were shown multiple pictures from Tuggle's phone of marijuana and weapons. Tuggle told Ector County Assistant District Attorney Courtney Williams under cross-examination that the word bro in the text were just a figure of speech and the text setting up drug transactions were between Barrera and her customers. He again insisted he reacted out of fear because Rentriera reached into his vehicle. I did not invite him into my vehicle, which is an extension of my home, under Texas state law, Tuggle said. He fired the gun blindly, Tuggle said. I did not see him run away, Tuggle said. Did you close your eyes? William asked. No, ma'am, I just blacked out and I pulled the trigger, Tuggle said. Williams then asked Tuggle if he'd written an email to Barrera from the jail last month in which he said he was planning to sue the county and use the money to launch a music career on TikTok. He also wrote he was glad the laws in Texas regarding shooting people in the back have changed and he's glad this is to be his last month in jail. Tuggle acknowledged he wrote the email. Closing arguments are scheduled for Wednesday morning in the 70th Judicial District Court. State of the Art, Reeves County to Open New Hospital by Ruth Campbell. Pecos Reeves County Hospital plans to open a new version of itself that is double its size in just a couple of months. The new $114 million facility is being paid for with oil and gas proceeds, sales tax, and prudent spending, Chief Executive Officer Brenda McKinney said. A Pecos native, McKinney says she had been CEO of the hospital for 6 years and was its chief financial officer for 4 years before that. Previously, she worked in banking. To be able to build a brand new state-of-the-art facility is probably at the top of any goal I would have ever had. Because not only are we building a new state-of-the-art facility with new equipment, new furnishings, it will all be paid for. No bonds, nothing, McKinney said. The contract for the new two-story, 140,000-square-foot facility is Robbins and Morton in Birmingham, Alabama, and the architects are Perkins plus Wheel. The firm Healthcare Relocation is working on the logistics of moving people and the current facility is around 87,000 square feet. McKinney said, we just had been putting money away, maybe a little from revenues. As the oil and gas industry was ramping up in Reeves County, we do receive a half a cent of the sales tax. We were very frugal with the monies coming in, knowing this was a huge goal of the district's, hoping that we would be able to at least pay half of it in cash, but we were able to secure enough funds that we'll be able to pay for the whole project, which is about $114 million plus. It'll all be paid for in cash, McKinney said. When they started the project, she said they knew they would have about 60 to 70% secured because of the money they put aside. But as you know, oil and gas continued to do well in Reeves County and the work in Reeves County. Any extra that we would get from sales tax and stuff that we tried to put it all away so that we could go ahead and pay for every bit of it, McKinney said. The original hospital is 44 or 45 years old. Instead of trying to work on the current building, they decided to build new. They owned a little bit of the land it's going to sit on, and the rest was purchased from the Pecos Economic Development Corporation. The new two-story facility will sit on about 7 acres. McKinney says she has about 270 employees with part-time and PRN or as-needed employees. There would be another 25 or so. McKinney said they will bring over some equipment that have been purchased over the years, but they are trying to update a lot. We'll have a brand new in-house MRI machine, a brand new CT machine, and a new radiology machine. We'll have a women's imaging with a new mammography machine, bone density ultrasound. We'll have a hyperbaric chamber, which we've never had. We're very excited to bringing that service to the community. Our dialysis unit will be going over with us, so we'll have a new dialysis unit there within the new building, she added. The hyperbaric chamber helps heal wounds faster with oxygen, among other things. McKinney said they want to have an open house before they move into the facility to show the community and visitors all the great stuff we've done. A date for the open house hasn't been secured yet, but they are looking at the first week in June. Summit Tackles Regional Literacy Issues by OA News. Monahans. Filling out job applications, reading prescription bottles, getting promoted at work, or getting work are some of the ways literacy impacts people's lives. The newly formed Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin brought together about 100 elected officials, business representatives, foundation, and educators from around the region Tuesday at the Ward County Event Center to review data collected by the American Institutes for Research on local literacy rates. Attendees were from throughout West Texas and Southeast New Mexico. The Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin Needs Assessment, prepared by AIR, showed the population of the basin is expected to grow by more than 68% over the next 20 years, and 30% of those jobs will require Level 3 literacy skills. Skills that require workers to navigate dense, lengthy, and complicated text and apply their understanding to new tasks and contexts. The growth will drive the need for additional workers for the approximately 115,000 new jobs that will need to be filled by 2050, the report said. In Texas, 28% are at level 1 or below, 32% at level 2, and 40% at level 3 or above. New Mexico is at 29% for level 1 or below, 31% at level 2, and 39% at level 3 or above. Republican Brooks Landgraf of Odessa gave welcoming remarks and talked to the Odessa American afterward. "We have a crisis not only in our country, but specifically here in Texas. We always boast about the Texas miracle and being an economic juggernaut, but if we want to sustain that, we have to have a skilled workforce, and you can't have a skilled workforce without higher rates of adult literacy," Landgraf said. "So we clearly have some improvement to make. The low rates that we have right now are we're leaving opportunities on the table." The Barbara Bush Foundation has released a study that indicates that if all Americans could read at a sixth grade level or higher, that would have a positive economic impact of $2.2 trillion a year. But also that low rate of adult literacy has a societal impact. More than half of the individuals incarcerated in the United States didn't finish high school. And so, by improving adult literacy, we not only have a positive economic impact, but we're also just improving the quality of life for so many people across not only the Permian Basin, but across the country. Trent Sharp, the lead for the American Institutes for Research, and Ray Perryman, president and CEO of the Perryman Group, gave an economic analysis. Perryman said the region is 8,700 skilled workers short of where the region needs to be. He added that what's been done in the past is to bring workers in. But Perryman said that is not the best solution, and demographics are working against the area and the country. The population also is aging. There are 11 million job openings in the United States, more than there have been since records have been kept, Perryman said. In Texas, he said, there are more than 900,000 openings, but the birth rate is the lowest it has ever been. Sharp said the summit was convened because when the report was compiled, they recognized that it would be good to talk about the findings and talk about the implications. He added that it was a chance to reflect together and prompt ideas for collective actions at a regional scale. Quick hits. Digital Culture of Kids. First Presbyterian Church, 800 West Texas Avenue in Midland, will present the Digital Culture of Kids from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. today. Henry Rollins, the Actor Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue, will present Henry Rollins, Good to See You Tour 2022 from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. today. For more information, visit theactor.com. Masquerade Jewelry and Accessories Sale. Odessa Regional Medical Center has scheduled a Masquerade Jewelry and Accessories Sale from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday and from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Friday in the ORMC East Auditorium. Proceeds benefit Pulse Community and Employee Assistance Program. Cash and debit credit cards accepted. Council hears proposal for 15 new OPD units. Total cost of police units would be $1.18 million by OA News. During Tuesday's work session, Odessa Police Department Deputy Chief Matt Davidson addressed City Council about the addition of 15 outfitted police package vehicles and equipment. Davidson detailed the 15 vehicles would be 2023 GMC Tahoes that included 11 patrol units, 3 administrative units, and 1 K-9 unit. The total cost of the 15 vehicles would be $1.18 million, and it would phase out 15 older units in the OPD fleet. Davidson said one of the units that is going to be phased out is a 2009, which he admitted he didn't realize was still in the fleet. In addition to the new units, OPD will also alter the logo on the side of the patrol to resemble more of the current OPD badge instead of the O with police laid over top of it. Davidson said the patrol units would cost a bulk of the $1.18 million at more than $888,000. The K-9 unit alone would cost $80,880, while the 3 administrative units would be more than $219,000. It will take a long time to get the entire fleet done, Davidson said. You have to start somewhere. Councilwoman of District 3, Deetra White, and Councilwoman of District 5, Mary Willis, were absent from Tuesday's work session. The council approved resolutions to adopt criteria for use in 2022 redistricting process and guidelines for persons submitting specific redistricting proposals and council providing comments. City Council will hold a redistricting meeting at 1 p.m. Monday at Council Chambers, 411 West 8th Street, 5th floor. City Attorney Natasha Brooks said during Tuesday's work session that during that meeting, Council may consider adoption of a final plan. The Council also heard from City of Odessa Traffic Coordinator Hal Fieldman about Fadre Road Improvements Project Update, heard from Odessa Public Works Director Thomas Kerr about amendments to Chapter 10, Development Regulations, Article 10.4, Impact Fees. Kerr said this item will be on future agenda items on regularly scheduled City Council meetings. And finally, the council also went into executive session for more than an hour to discuss pending litigation between the City of Odessa and the Odessa American, but no action was taken. Man arrested for allegedly firing a gun toward his wife twice by OA News. A 22-year-old Ector County man was arrested Sunday after his common-law wife told authorities he slapped her and fired a gun in her direction twice. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, deputies received a shots fired call from the 11,000 block of West 26th Street around 1:20 p.m. Sunday. When they arrived, a 33-year-old woman told them Andy Mendoza slapped her face, went outside, and grabbed a 9mm handgun from his vehicle, the report said. The woman said Mendoza pointed the gun at her from outside their RV, and when she told him to leave, he fired 2 rounds in her direction, according to the report. Deputies found 2 casings from a 9mm gun near where the woman said Mendoza was standing, the report said. Mendoza was arrested on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remains in the Ector County Jail on a $50,000 surety bond in connection with that case and on a $10,000 surety bond in connection with a Midland County drug case. Food bank donations. United Supermarkets and Market Street donated 4,960 pounds of apples to the West Texas Food Bank as part of the Take a Bite Out of Hunger program. This donation was part of a larger donation of more than 50,000 pounds of apples across Texas and New Mexico. In the first 11 years of the Take a Bite Out of Hunger program, United Family Stores have donated more than 500,000 pounds of apples and fed more than 167,000 families. Now, in the 12th year, the company continues to add to that total. We are so proud to continue the tradition of the Take a Bite Out of Hunger donations to food banks across our communities, said Joseph Bunting, produce business director for the United Family. Now, in our 12th year of this program, we understand just how much these donations mean to food banks and the families they serve. This donation marks a continuing commitment by United Supermarkets and Market Street as original partners of the Take a Bite Out of Hunger program, sponsored by First Fruits Marketing of Washington. Woman accused of trying to set husband on fire, by OA News. An Odessa woman was arrested last week after her husband told police she tried to set him on fire and then threatened him with two knives. According to an Odessa Police Department report, officers received a disturbance call around 5:30 p.m. Friday. When officers arrived at the home in the 5200 block of Clinton Avenue, a man told officers that his wife of 14 years, Chariot Verone Copper Bolin, attempted to light him on fire by throwing matches at him and placing a lit match on his skin. The man said he knocked the matches out of her hands, but she grabbed a kitchen knife and pointed it at him in a threatening manner, according to the report. He told the officers he grabbed the knife from her, cutting his hand in the process, but she grabbed a second one. At this point, the husband claimed to have defended himself, the report said. According to the report, officers observed a visible burn mark on the husband's forearm, a small cut on the inside of his right hand, and multiple burned and unburned matchsticks on the floor. Copper Bolin admitted to throwing lit matches at her husband, the report said. She was booked into Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence. She was released Sunday after posting a $20,000 surety bond.
Hello, this is Michael, reading from the Odessa American, Wednesday, May 4th, 2022, opinion. Letters to the editor. Vote yes to Props A and B. I wanted to ask all the citizens of Ector County to vote for yes for the school bond proposition A and B. I am a native Odessan. I went to Blackshear Elementary, then moved to LBJ the first year it was open in 1989. I then went to Nimitz and Permian High in 1997. We went to state in 95, and I was commencement speaker for my graduating class. 25 years since I graduated, and there has been no addition of a high school. I am not even sure when Permian and OHS were erected. I do see Nimitz now has 10 portables littering their fields. Don't let people try and convince you we do not have student population problem. We do. I understand a major concern is that we calculate the vote based on the cost of living going up, but not wages. The way to solve that is through quality education, and a new high school can help. My son has 45 kids in his math class. That is a lot of distraction. I have a lot of pride in my hometown, and I want to see it flourish and thrive. My office is the only business on Bonham Avenue, alongside the tennis courts. This year, my windows to my building have been broken, money stolen, and trash dumped along my one-acre lot, and on and on. MCH has recently erected a fence which prohibits foot traffic through their property, but now students pool in my lot where they smoke, drink, and fight. It's the worst I have ever seen it in my 15 years at this location. Odessa does not need to settle for or need any more prefabricated classrooms that are not meant for years of abuse by pubescent teens. Lubbock has 7 high schools. There are a lot of needs in Ector County. We must start to tackle them, one bite at a time. The west side will get a school. The need isn't going anywhere, but we have an opportunity at hand to ease some of the burden from the system. Let's also not forget the bond will also provide jobs for the people of our community. One thing we all agree on is that we need a new school. The where seems to be the major issue. There are 10,000 people in the area of the proposed new school, and there are land resources available. That is why the site was chosen. Contact your school board members to invest west as well, but right now we need this school and the maintenance. It is also important we elect competent leaders to plan for and forecast the growth needs in Ector County. An education system is a pillar of every successful community. The more schools, the better. So let's start building them and seize on the opportunity to advance Ector County residents' education and update existing facilities. Don't let ECISD get left with more portables. It takes us coming together for what is best for our children. There are new businesses opening all the time and bringing families with them. Nacaro, for example, will, in the next 7 years, be building. They will need to recruit workers and their families to live there. We will lose quality professional families without quality education. Leave something for the future of Odessa and vote yes on the school bond A and B. I'd like to thank Dr. Scott Murray, Lorraine Perryman, and Delma Abalos for their relentless efforts to improve the quality of education for the citizens of Ector County. Ben Kiros, D.C., Odessa. Support for students is needed now. Hello, Odessa. As a product of ECISD, I must say that I strongly support the school board's decision to move forth with a recommendation for a school bond for our ECISD students. The number one issue we are faced with right now, each and every day, are the high schools being overcrowded. This is a fact. As a student at Permian and a coach at Odessa High years ago, there were approximately 2,500 students in the hallways. Now the high schools are 4,000 strong. It is a packed building, not just at one school, but at both. We have too many people trying to move from location to location in a short passing period, hour after hour each day. If you haven't been on the inside of either high school when this happens, then you need to try to see it for yourself. It is an eye-opening experience to see it, and it is the students, teachers, and administrators that are suffering. This bond will allow the district to build 2 new schools and cover the cost of other district building maintenance and improvements over the next few years. For those of you who don't have a direct connection to the school district, I ask you to consider this. These kids are our future, and it is in everyone's best interest to invest in their success. Education for our youth is an investment. Please vote yes for Proposition A and Proposition B and make this community as good for our students as it has been for us. Odessa is going to continue to grow and grow in the next few years, and it is easy to observe firsthand the positive impact this bond will have on their learning environment and quality of education. See you at the polls. Tracy Borchardt, Odessa. Vote no on the bond issues. Have you ever heard the comment of browbeaten or bullied? Maybe that is how the citizens that live outside of the city limits feel. We pay our share of taxes, and it seems that we are forgotten about when it comes to schools, water, better roads, or even a park. I think a fire department is probably out of the question, too. West Odessa has needed a high school for a long time. We finally got some elementary schools, and I looked at one of them to see what the attendance was, and Murray Fly has 957 pre-K to K-5, and I feel that the other three has about the same attendance. ECISD noted that in the area that the bond election is, the growth was about 5,500. West Odessa has almost that many in elementary schools. West Odessa's population has tripled in the last few years to a figure of 66,000 plus. I don't have this in writing, but I was told that if we don't react now, it will be 2035 before we would have a chance of getting a high school. Middle schools are never mentioned. I don't know, so I am guessing that students are on the bus starting around 7 a.m. and maybe not getting home until 6 p.m. That seems worse than overcrowded hallways. Now for the water problems that started back in the 1960s when Ocotillo Park on West 16th Street had a subdivision with extremely nice homes. Their well water table dropped to almost nothing. They tried to get the city to furnish water to their area. Does this sound familiar? Well, of course, the city was not in favor, so people started moving out of the area. The city started water restrictions, and the water well business went crazy. I don't begrudge people in the city for drilling water wells to save their landscapes, but there again, West Odessa couldn't get city water and had to rely on their dwelling water wells. We mentioned schools, city water, now roads. Oh, I would like to mention that back in the 60s, natural gas was installed in West Odessa. So why not water? Our roads have had potholes filled so many times that you could have paved a mile. Pay attention because this paragraph is serious. If all of the citizens don't get out and vote, we are going to stay in this stalemate condition. Don't be afraid to vote. If you are not sure how, well, there is help available. West Odessa has the lowest number of votes, so let's change that where our community can change. Talk to your family, neighbors, and friends. Let's pull together and make a change. Thanks for letting me vent. S.J. Kelly, Odessa. Traffic won't be an issue with proposed new high school. I understand that there have been some concerns expressed regarding the traffic that might occur around the proposed new high school at Faudry Road and Yukon Road. Let me put your minds at rest. We really need this new school in the midst of our fastest growing area, as well as the other improvements found in Proposition A and B, and there will be no traffic problem. I know a little bit about this issue. I am the president of LCA, a civil engineering firm that has been in Odessa since 1979. During that time, I have designed and overseen dozens of infrastructure initiatives in our community. We are presently working with the City of Odessa and the Parks Bell Ranch developers and coordinating on four major road projects. Faudry Road will be completely reconstructed and widened to five lanes from State Highway 191 to Yukon Road. Yukon Road will be completed to State Highway 191, and both overpasses finished at least a year before the proposed new high school is opened in 2025. These projects have been carefully and thoughtfully planned to alleviate current congestion in the area and accommodate the additional traffic from the new high school and the continued growth and development in the area. These projects will provide additional roadways and overpasses to ensure that traffic in the area is manageable for students, teachers, and surrounding residents alike. There will be no traffic problem. My children all attended school in ECISD and went on to be successful and productive members of society. We need to offer both current and future students the opportunity for an excellent education with improved facilities and technology, access to career training, as well as safe and less crowded learning environments. Our community needs skilled workers for local businesses today and tomorrow, and homegrown employees with deep local roots are always the best. Our hallways have a huge traffic problem that we must solve. But when it comes to our roadways, there will be no traffic problem. Please join me in support of both ECISD propositions this Saturday. Our kids deserve it, our community needs it, and our future depends on it. In case I forgot to mention it, there will be no traffic problem. John F. Landgraf, Odessa. Show your support for ECISD. If the upcoming bond doesn't pass, it won't be because a vocal minority objects. It will be because too many people just didn't vote. Our district's needs are indisputable. An aging infrastructure, excruciatingly overcrowded high schools, inadequate facilities for CTWE training, training that gives kids access to honest, high-paying jobs. But if those needs don't move you, consider what this district does for people in our community. ECISD deserves our support. 2 years ago, the district was 350 teachers short. Now, 98% of our teaching positions are filled because the district used TRE money to raise teachers' salaries and improve earning opportunities. In 2020, the district responded to the pandemic shutdown by pivoting from in-class to at-home learning in a single week and providing breakfast and lunch for children who would have otherwise gone hungry. Each child now has a computer or iPad, and the district's working towards countywide internet access. 3- and 4-year-olds can now attend free pre-K, meaning that kids from all income levels are ready to learn the first day of kindergarten. Kindergarten readiness rose 13% this year and is predicted to hit 64% next year. Graduation rates are at a 20-year high. The college, career, and military readiness indicator is above every other school in our area, and SAT scores are above state average. Real people, kids and their parents, are measurably better off because of ECISD. What if every parent whose child got breakfast and lunch during the pandemic, or a free computer, or reliable internet access, or quality pre-K education, or a certified teacher instead of a sub, voted yes on the bond? What if every parent whose child was turned away from a vocational program or took vocational classes in an old, shabby facility or fights through a crush of bodies to change classes at OHS or Permian voted yes? What if every teacher who appreciates the chance for a better salary voted yes? What if the rest of us who recognize that effective public education raises the quality of everyone's life voted yes? If everybody in the district has touched positively united, this bond would pass in a landslide. It's easy to say no, but that's not how good things happen. Good things happen when good people care. The folks in ECISD care about our kids and our community. The evidence is overwhelming. They deserve our support. Please vote yes on Propositions A and B on Saturday, May 7th. Donna Smith, Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.